Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Let's Clear the Air Energy Podcast. I'm Adam Murray, along with my co-hosts, Brian Nix and Stuart Salters. Today, we're joined by Terry McAuliffe, the former governor of Virginia, former chair of the Democratic National Committee, and currently the chair of the Virginia State Campaign for Natural Allies for a Clean Energy Future Coalition, which GPA Midstream is a member. Governor McAuliffe, welcome to the Let's Clear the Air Energy Podcast.
Thanks, Adam. Great to be with everybody. I'm here in beautiful Northern Virginia.
Nice. Well, you know, we talk so much about energy and politics, but first I was doing my research and I saw that you started your first business at the age of 14. What business was that, and how did, you know, what got you started in the business?
Yeah, so through the course of my career, everybody sort of knows me through politics. You know, I served as chairman of the National Party and chaired Bill Clinton's campaign, Hillary's campaign, and obviously governor of Virginia. But I had an entrepreneurial background my whole life. I've started close to 24 companies. I've been in banking, insurance, home building. But I started my first business in Syracuse, New York. I was going to have to pay for college myself, so I needed to make money. And I was walking home from carrying golf bags one day, and I saw a guy out sealing his driveway. I said, I've got to start my own business. I've got to make money. And I went home and I typed up a letter, handed it out to my neighbors. I got 3-4 jobs the first day. And then the business just exploded. When I was 15, I moved into parking lots, tarring, sealing parking lots. I had a gigantic truck, a big old dairy truck, got converted to, I used to cart around the gigantic 55-gallon barrels of hot tar. And I didn't even have a driver's license yet, but I was an entrepreneur. No, I didn't get any tickets. And I started doing parking lots and, you know, had people working for me. It was a great experience as a young man. Did it for about 7-8 years. And then I've never worked for anyone in my life. I've always started companies. I bought a bankrupt building company, home building, built about, I don't know, 6,000 homes a year. I've been very entrepreneurial my whole life. I've had great successes. I've had my share of failures. And, you know, it's all part of life. I enjoy doing it that way. Sink or swim myself.
Yeah, that's hard business, doing the asphalt and tar. And that's
pretty brutal. You want to talk about hot and those fumes just coming up when you're putting down on 100. I don't have to tell you. I mean, we got a bunch of folks from Texas, Oklahoma on the call. I don't have to tell you that those fumes coming up, and boy, it was hot. I had a couple of heat strokes during the club, but I was young. I was 14, 15, 16, 17. Nothing could stop me.
Man.
I started a bank when I was a young man. I was the youngest chairman of a bank in American history. So I've done fun stuff, you know, give it a try.
Well, yeah, you've got a long list of very interesting different careers in your past. So why don't you tell us a little bit on how that kind of drove experience for you to get into politics a little bit?
Yeah. So I always loved politics. My dad was the county chairman of the Democratic Party in Onondaga County. And literally, if I can, 6, 7, 8 years old, I still remember going door to door. I remember when I was like, I don't know, 10 years old, he brought me to a fundraiser. I was in charge of collecting the checks. And he said, Terry, no one gets in the door if you don't get a check. And, you know, 60 years later, that was an expensive lesson for a lot of folks. I'm still, you know, asking. I've raised billions of dollars in politics. You know, I've done it as a volunteer. I've never taken any pay. I like it that way. But I always loved politics. And for me, it was a good way to give back. I think in my career, you know, it's been a fascinating career in business and politics to become a governor of Virginia, the governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, to be chairman of the National Party, to be best friends of a president. I mean, listen, I'm a kid from Syracuse who, you know, I mean, it's a fun story, but it's a story that I want other people to have the opportunities I had as a young man. So for me, politics was about giving back. Working for the party was about in supporting candidates, you know, whom I agree with. You know, my whole history in politics, I've tried to get along with everybody. I was a Democratic governor, but I had top Republican business leaders support my candidacy. I'm in the middle. I'm all about jobs. I'm fiscally conservative. socially progressive. I believe people ought to make their own decisions about their bodies and whom they date. And my job as governor was to create jobs. And what I said was probably 70% of America, but you and I can disagree. It doesn't mean we're enemies. In this idea today that everything's a Game of Thrones and you're a bad person because you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, you know, it's just not a place how I grew up. And so for me, getting in politics was about uniting people, coming together. And then I should say, as governor, to me, it's the greatest job in the world. Outside of being president, I don't mean this disrespectfully. I could not be a member of Congress. I couldn't be a senator or a member of the House. I just don't have the personality. I like to work for myself. I like to make a decision and get it done immediately, which doesn't happen in Congress today. You're governor. You sign executive order, man. It's done that afternoon. And for me, I created a record amount of jobs, recruited a record amount of companies to come to Virginia. Personal income went up 14.8%. So when I say jobs, I'm talking about good paying jobs. But, you know, I leaned in, protect a woman's right to choose and all those other issues that I believe in. You can do that as governor. So politics, you can make a difference in life. But I do it as a happy warrior. I'm not one of these lemon-sucking, hand-wringing folks who just complain about everything. This is the greatest nation on earth. What are you complaining about? Honestly, I've traveled. I've been fortunate. I've been to well over 100 countries. Let me tell you, folks, there is nothing like coming back to this country. And you should see what people have to live in other countries. You would never complain a day in your life.
No, that's awesome. I appreciate that, Governor. I guess thinking a little bit about those jobs you created, the economic development successes you had in Virginia, I know there's probably some familiar names of companies that we could rattle off, but just curious, how did energy play a part in that economic development?
Great question. And this is something I always used to say to my legislators and so forth. You know, so I was the most traveled governor in American history. I did 45 international trade missions in 4 years. I went all over the world recruiting companies to move to Virginia. And a lot of those jobs I wanted were in parts of my state, South Side, Southwest Virginia. Manufacturing was important. Well, you cannot bring a big manufacturing facility to your state unless you can provide them with energy. And it is seared into my mind as governor. I won 2 major manufacturing projects, one from Qatar and one from Egypt, that would have gone to Southwest Virginia. And, you know, Southwest Virginia used to be coal country and those coal jobs have gone. And I just felt important that we replace and bring new economic opportunity. And I lost those 2 jobs, those 2 projects, because the head of Dominion, who wanted to work with me, Tom Farrell, said, I cannot give you a long-term gas contract. And without those long-term gas contracts of providing gas to the facility, they couldn't come and build their plant. So it's a great question. So for me, I'll never forget that. Now, we did get a lot done, and I did get a lot of projects done with Dominion and so forth. But 2 big ones I lost because we did not have the infrastructure. Virginia, you know, imports more energy. We're the second big, we used to be one, we're now 2. Importer of energy into our state. So having a reliable, affordable, dependable energy infrastructure is key to growing an economy in your state, especially in those jobs that demand obviously a lot of electricity. Virginia, as you all know or may not know, is the number one state in America today for data centers. I mean, we have 663 operating. We have 595 under construction. Think of that. Texas is right behind. I think Texas is 2nd. They demand a tremendous amount of energy. And, you know, there's a big movement today. I think 80% of Americans today are against data centers. But the point is, they're here in Virginia, and I'm concerned because they're going to our energy requirement over the course of the next 20 years is going to triple. And for me, keeping, as I said, all of the above energy strategy, cheap gas, dependable, when you turn that light switch on, it goes on, is really important and really important for governors. And as governor, you know, I did the biggest wind project utility in American history. I did the big Virginia project with Dominion, which comes online next year. I think about 600,000 homes will be lit up through the wind project. I also did more solar projects than any governor in the PJM, the 13 states. So I was all for renewables, but I was also for natural gas infrastructure. You need all of it. Today, you know, in Virginia, you think of our mix, you know, we're about 50% natural gas. We're about 30, 32% nuclear, but our wind and solar are 8%. Now, I'm all for wind and solar, but it's not like in 5 years we can shut down nuclear and gas. It just doesn't work. It's just not, it can't, as I say, I have to govern in reality. That's what I have to do is govern. So you need infrastructure. I'm big on natural gas. I think our party's been wrong on energy and a lot of energy issues. We got to get smarter on that. We need infrastructure. And as I say, that's why I created a record amount of jobs, because I did have some energy infrastructure. So go to your job, but you got to do all the above. It's got to be a mixture of all the infrastructure.
So kind of a two-parter here. I thought it was interesting you chose to focus on the two big losses that you got in your tenure. One, I guess, do you think a sort of a different energy policy, or if you had different levers to pull, those kind of would have come through? And then also, you mentioned your all of the above stance, which I think is becoming more popular, but when you were doing this, it wasn't so popular, right? So how did you have to address going against some of your constituents on that?
Yeah, it's a good question. They announced two major pipelines while I was governor, Mountain Valley and the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. And what I always said as governor, I support infrastructure, energy infrastructure. It's got to meet the permit. You've got to have the environmental standards. And if it doesn't meet them, then it shouldn't go forward. And, you know, we actually have the regulations in place in Virginia to make sure if we're doing this infrastructure, we're doing it that protects the environment and everything else related to that. So, you know, I would go forward with projects, but I knew that we always had good regulations and we had, you know, my appointees, the boards that protected the environment, you know, were very strict about that. But I tried to always make the point, this is about our environment. This is about jobs of the future. I can't bring them in if I can't provide them with energy. The other thing I should mention, which is important, which always weighed on my mind, Virginia is one of the most, if not the most pro-military state in America. I'm very proud of that. We have the largest naval base in the world, Norfolk Naval Station. We have all the even SEAL teams are in Virginia, the odd SEAL team, they call them DEVGRU now. The SEAL teams are out in San Diego. You know, we have the Pentagon in Virginia. We have all these assorted Oceana, Air Force. We have so many air bases and everything. I can tell you, it's called down in Hampton Roads, all this collection of all these military operations with the largest naval base. It's called Fleet Forces Command. On several instances, they lost energy. Now, I can tell you this as governor. Every aircraft carrier built in the United States of America for our Navy is built in one state, Virginia. Every aircraft carrier ever built, all built in Virginia. We have the largest naval base in the world. I am so proud of that. My dad was an Army captain. My son was a Marine captain. I love our military. That is, in addition, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of jobs. Well, if I couldn't tell the commander of Fleet Forces Command that I'm dealing with his energy problems, then they would move their assets out of Virginia, plain and simple. They cannot and will not stay in a state that they, for one second, our defense capabilities of our country are shut down because they have blackouts because we didn't provide them with energy. While I was governor, we had 5 blackouts. They didn't last long, but it was problematic. So that's another thing. So it's about your military. It's about your job creation, all of that. So listen, this is the point I always made as governor. Sometimes people agree with me. Sometimes they don't. But you know, I try, as I say, I always govern in reality. I tried to do things every day to have a good energy mix, that it was dependable, reliable, and affordable. That's what mattered. And here we are. Think of where we are in the country today. People's utility bills have gone up anywhere from 9 to 16%. Here in Virginia last year, our utility bills went up 9.5%. for Americans today, where inflation is now up, your gas prices are up. Your mortgage rates are 6.6 today. Now your utilities are up. It is really causing issues for American families. 1 out of 20 of Americans today are what you call utility debt. They really can't afford to pay their utility bills. And as you all know, you have to pay your utility bills. I mean, you can maybe push some groceries off and maybe try alternative modes of not buy some gas at the pumps, but you have to pay your utility bills. You got to have heat. You got to have cooling. And it's a real problem in this country. And that's why I say for the midterm elections that we have coming up this year, and Adam, you mentioned this, politicians have changed a little bit on this topic. I happen to have been there early, but you know, you see some of our Northeastern Democratic governors now embracing natural gas pipelines and other energy infrastructure because they know they can't have their citizens going without energy or paying 15% more for their utility bills. They can't afford to do that. So we're at crossroads in this country. And as I say, with the data center and the AI and all the explosion of the needs for energy today, we have got to figure this out. So we need more, you know, we've got the Chesapeake compressor. We've done things in Virginia, but we as a country need more energy infrastructure. I mean, as I say, 50% of what we use today on a hot day is going to be natural gas. And on a hot day, and I love wind and solar, but their capacity cannot keep up. In fact, the hottest day of this year, wind went from 9 to about 4.5. They couldn't keep up. And solar was very similar to that. And what happens is, they then go to alternative sources to fund their energy production. And then you move to gas. I mean, you move to oil and coal, which are much dirtier means of energy. And that's not a place we want to be as a country. So I'm all for natural gas. Let's get there. I'm all for nuclear. But as you know, it takes time. It's expensive to do it. And I'm all for wind and solar. I'm for energy efficiencies. As I say, I'm for all of the above approach. But it's a serious issue. And you know, I'm glad you folks are talking about it.
The governor, kind of going back to the data center topic, you know, that's obviously the big new thing everybody keeps talking about, right? And as you pointed out, there's a lot of people for, a lot of people against them. But one thing we constantly hear about is electrical provisions for them, right? The utilities can't keep up. The utility model's not really built for the fast growth. We got grid problems. So this will kind of be, a two-parter. As much as you've seen in Virginia, the data center building, and obviously about to double the amount of them that are in your state, do you think that there is a bubble of AI and that, you know, the data centers are kind of a long-term thing that are going to happen? And then the second piece, if you are governor over a state that's got a lot of, you know, regulations and permitting problems, trying to get electricity to these people, what would you do, or what kind of would be your platform to kind of help this out?
Yeah. So as governor, I did come up with what we call the Virginia Energy Plan, which, I put together. You need the standards and the regulations always to protect the environment. I mean, that is number one. You've got to do that. But I put an energy plan together based on innovation, based on energy conservation, based on new infrastructure that we have. I talked about the compressor and so forth. So we did it. So we don't have to redo it in Virginia. We have that plan in place going forward. And if I'm a governor today, and let's talk about the data centers we have to understand that they're going to require 3 times more energy in the next 20 years. That is a frightening thought. Because as I say today, I mean, look at Virginia, we have to import. I mean, we're the second biggest importer in the country. That's a crisis for us. And that's why we got to get in front of us. People say, and it's a choice. If a local community doesn't want a data center, they shouldn't have them. But I will say this, they are going to be built somewhere. And people need to understand that. And I think what everybody says is let's get them away from, you know, households and get them out, which would mean a longer transmission line and so forth. But, you know, you got to get them away because people don't like the humming of the noise. The other big issue with them is the issue of water in the use of water. And I don't have to tell you folks, we have a water crisis in the world today. I just read a story the other day on the Danube is so low today that they're finding all these World War II German vehicles are now, you can find them. They're, the water is so low. There was a story this week on Lake Mead, which supplies a lot of the water for, you know, our states out west and California and the rest of them. It's at a crisis proportion. I think it's the lowest level it's had in 30 years. So these are big issues that we need to come together on. And I guess what I hate about politics today is it's become so partisan and nobody gets in a room and says, all right, let's solve this problem. You know, I had a very Republican legislature. I was a Democratic governor. I got a vast majority of my bills passed, governor's bills, with a Republican legislature and bring them into the government. I would sit down and say, what do you need? Here's what I need. Let's get to a place. Let's compromise. Compromise is not a bad word. And let us get to a place where we have some wins here. That just doesn't happen today. And the Congress is just plain broken. They just don't talk to each other. It's a disgrace. That's why I say you couldn't pay me to be in Congress today. No offense. I'd like to get stuff done. And so is it a bubble with AI? I think, yeah, it's a good question. There's a distinct possibility. But as I say, they're going to continue to build these somewhere in America. So we're going to need the capacity and the generation somehow to do it. It's happening. It's here. But, you know, a broader issue. You know, you look at the big companies, OpenAI, Anthropic, and the rest of them. You saw this week that China now is coming up with some AI a lot cheaper. And who knows if that could undermine some of our big AI companies. And listen, we're not here talking about finance, but I would say, you know, what's propping up the stock market? You know, we've had some good earnings, but you know, these big companies, NVIDIA and so forth, you know, they are really holding this stock market. And if anything were to stumble on that, it could be huge issues for us in this country. And everyone only has a 401k in this country.
Governor, just so I shared earlier that I live in Washington, D.C. For some reason, my wife and I left Charlottesville about 12 years ago to move to D.C. I still sometimes question that decision, but...
Not believe you just said that. You left Charlottesville, Virginia, one of the most beautiful cities in America. I mean,
we thought, you know, what do they say? Greener pastures. That's not always true. So,
okay. Fair enough. I love DC. It's a great, you know, there are what, 700,000 or 9 million people, but I always love working with Mayor Bowser and the rest of them, but you know,
we get back to Charlottesville often enough. So we love the wineries, the breweries, just the cool vibes for sure. But if I can ask you a DC question, you talked a little bit about steak.
I tell you, Monday night, Doswell, Virginia, the inaugural Legend Award, Governor of the Decade, given by the craft brew industry. Guess who the recipient was? Yours truly. I got the inaugural because while I was governor, I opened up more craft breweries than any governor in America. Very proud of it. And they actually brewed my old keg Irish American Stout. I got my own keg with my picture on it now.
Nice.
Now we're
dropping. Which brewery was it? What brewery was it?
Well, they were all there at it. They came together as a compilation and came up with this because I recruited Stone to come to Virginia. Remember that was a big thing for me then. And so they designed a beer for me, but under law, you couldn't put my picture on the bottle. I was really angry over that. So. They rectified that wrong of 8 years ago.
Just signed an executive order and get rid of that one.
Yeah, I should have done that. But, you know, I opened a craft brewery like every week, and they would always have a picture of me in the front of Richmond Times Dispatch, you know, holding up a beer at some brewery, and some people would write in, gosh, this guy drink all day. But breweries, tourism, great jobs, a locally sourced, it's great for the agriculture business. I mean, I loved everything about the craft brew business.
Yeah, no, that makes two of us. I'll buy into that. But no, if I can ask you though, is there something that can happen here in DC with federal policy that could improve infrastructure construction?
Yes. I don't want to make today overly partisan, but I mean, look at the insanity that Trump did on wind. I mean, we had five major projects in America, including ours in Virginia, that is to come online next year. He came out and tried to stop all of them, as you know, shut them down. Now, we all went to court and injunction, and the court immediately, the judge immediately ruled in our favor, and they're all back on construction, but they stopped construction. But I'll be honest with you, if you're an investor in the renewable space, are you going to invest knowing that the president of the United States is going to try and stop you? No. So I don't want to make today political, but I'm for all of the above. All of it. We need more wind. We need more solar. We need more nuclear. We need more gas infrastructure in this country. And I just think, I hate to say it, I'm the most optimistic guy in the world, but things are just broken. And working with Trump to try and get a comprehensive energy policy, I would hope so, Stuart, but I don't think that's likely to happen. I think we're going to have to wait for the next president. And then he's going to, or she's going to have to do what I did and get everybody, bring Democrats, Republicans in a room. We are facing a crisis. We need more energy infrastructure. But because, Stuart, you're right, we do need a federal policy. This is a crisis we're facing. 5, 10, 15 years from now, we just cannot produce the energy we need to do what we need to do. And prices are going to go up, as you all know. And it won't be as reliable and dependable as we hope as Americans. So I would hope so. I'm optimistic. But if you saw what the president did the last couple of months, which tried to stop wind farms because he said they were killing birds. I mean, come on. It's insanity. I didn't know that Trump was such a big bird lover, but whatever. I'll leave that aside. Honestly, crazy. Come on. Let's get stuff done.
Amen. Amen.
All right.
Let's talk a little bit about our connection here. So last November, you became the national co-chair of the National Allies for a Clean Energy Future Coalition. So can you talk a little bit about that organization so our listeners can better understand what they do and maybe let them know how to get involved?
Yeah. So it's a great group. Mary Landrieu is one of the original, Senator Landrieu from the great state of Louisiana. It's really trying for us Democrats to get prominent, well-known Democrats to talk about energy. It, as I say, because if you look at our history, Adam, sometimes, you know, on energy, we have not been forward thinking. And, you know, listen, I had bills come to my desk that, you know, by 2030 or 2035, we want Virginia to be 100% renewable. Okay. Well, I just told you that it's about 7-8% of our energy supply today. So, I mean, the idea that I'm going to shut down 84% of our energy production, it's just not feasible. So my only point is there have been some things out there. I'm just joining this group because we're about, and gas is so plentiful. It's clean and we have the ability to become, you know, going forward, totally energy independent. We have, you know, more gas and Saudi Arabia has oil and all that. We all know that. And it's there, but it doesn't do us any good if it's there. We can't, you know, transmit it and convert it into energy production. So this group is like people like myself, and I've done a bunch of events and talking about where we need to be as a country. And we spend most of our time talking to Democrats. And as I say, mentioned earlier, Democratic governors, and I love working with governors because, no offense, Mary and Tim Ryan was in the Congress. No, I love y'all. Governors get stuff done every single day, and we have the ability to move that ball in our state if we want more infrastructure and things like that. So what I'd really do is try to talk to governors, both Democrat and Republican. You know, I used to be chairman of the National Governors Association, which is a bipartisan group. And I'm working with the governors to say, you know, here's where we are today. We got a crisis in front of us. We got to solve it. Your citizens will not be happy if their utility bills continue to go up 9, 10, 12, 13% a year. It's unsustainable model. And secondly, you won't be able to create jobs in your state because you can't bring manufacturing. And like me, if you have a huge military operations in your state, you're putting them at risk. And none of that's acceptable. And that's why this group is really to sort of lay the framework of where we need to be as a nation over the course of the next 5, 10, 15 years.
So I'd be remiss if I didn't notice that you were kind of known for putting some bold predictions out there in the public, like the Washington Wizards maybe winning an NBA championship and things like that. So it kind of ties into our last question that we always do on every podcast. So maybe we can get a prediction out of you and then you can answer the question. But, you know, you're back on the podcast, you know, 3 years from now and you're happy. You're happy about what's going on in the government or in Virginia or whatever. You know, what's happened to make you happy, you know, and let's put a prediction behind that, see if we can hold you to it.
Well, number one, I'll be happy if the Washington Commanders win a Super Bowl. It's been too long for
us. There you go.
I'd love to see the Nats back in the World Series. I'd love to see us win another Stanley Cup. So, yeah, I'm a huge sports fan, so I hope all those. But honestly, I mean, today where we are, you know, as I say, inflation's up. I mean, everything's up. Gas prices, utility, mortgage. There's such anger in this country today. The president of the United States is now the lowest approval rating of any president in modern history. He's somewhere in the low 30s. I hope 3 years from today, we're back, no matter who is the president. I will predict that we win the House of Representatives this year. I think we win a bunch of governors. I think we pick up the governors in Iowa, Ohio this year. I think we got a great shot in Nevada and Georgia picking up governors. I think we're going to win, mark my word, you know, over 650 state legislative seats this year. And then I hope we win the White House in 28, but no matter who is in that White House, I just want us to get to a place, no matter what your party, Democrat or Republican, you put that aside, and we get people back working together again for the sake of the United States of America. We are, as I mentioned earlier, we are the greatest nation on earth. There are young men and women today, you know, fighting for that freedom force. You know, only 1% of our population serves in our military. We've got great folks out there. I'm proud of my son who was a Marine and my dad who was a captain in the Army. We have a lot to be proud of. And I just watched the other day, and if you guys haven't done it, I think it's called The American Experiment on Netflix. It's a 5-6-part series about the history of the United States of America. I just wish every American would watch those 5-part series and what the founders of this nation went through to get these 13 colonies to come together, to start a currency. It's incredible what they did. And when you watch it, you will never complain again because we have nothing to complain about. And we owe so much to the people who wore the cloth of our country and the people who founded this great nation. And we owe it to them to work together to get stuff done and quit the complaining, quit the lemon sucking, quit the hand wringing, and let's get stuff done.
Well, Governor, we can only hope for some of that, right? So we very much appreciate your time. Thank you for joining Stuart, Brian, and I. It's been an honor, a great conversation. And like I said, hopefully we can have you back in 3 years.
I loved it. Let's do it more in 3 years.
There we go. We can make that happen.
Let's get that craft beer. We can have that with us.
Yeah. Hey, listen, you get what you paid for on advice, right? So there you go.
All right. Well, everyone, thanks for joining the Let's Clear the Air Energy podcast, and we look forward to the next episode. Have a great day.